This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom. Hello and welcome to a very special Women of Letters as we take off to a galaxy far, far away. Yes, it's not Supernatural, it's Star Wars. But Amy and I love Star Wars, and we wanted an excuse to talk about it and podcast about it. So if you're expecting us to talk about Supernatural, I'm sure Supernatural will come up.
I'm sure.
In some shape or form, because it's us. But, Amy, are you looking forward to talking about Star Wars The Force Awakens?
Well, seeing as I have been pretty much constantly talking about it now for over a week and watching it, so I've seen it three times, and I honestly, as somebody came up to me at work on Thursday and started talking to me about it, and I thought to myself, I have been talking about this movie solidly now for a week with various people who had either seen it or not seen it and wanted to know about it but didn't want to know about it, or you know, and so yeah, I'm happy to talk about it because I've been talking about it a lot, a hell of a lot.
The Force is strong in my family. My father has it. My sister has it. You have that power too. Chewie, we're home.
It's a great time to be a fan of this movie. And if you're not, well, sucks to be you.
Just if you're not, who are you?
And the wonderful, there's so many great, there's great essays and posts out there and interviews. And if, like me, you'd been avoiding a lot of spoilers and everything before the movie, there's a whole lot of stuff to go back and read. And now, of course, all the fan art and fanfics coming out.
Easter eggs that you can read about after you've seen. You, I missed that. How did I even miss that?
Just wonderful. Yeah. So, yes, it's all happening in Star Wars land.
It is, which is very exciting. It's very exciting.
So we should, I think the convention is to give our Star Wars brief update of our Star Wars history. So Amy, when did you first discover Star Wars?
1977. So I went with my dad when I was a little girl because my dad really loved this kind of thing. He didn't, I wouldn't say he was a sci-fi fan as such, but he was a huge Doctor Who fan. So like I grew up watching Doctor Who, and so he took me to see Star Wars, and I totally remember seeing it with him. And I don't remember, I know I went and saw the next two movies with him, but I don't remember the next two movies because we don't talk about those a lot. I don't remember them. I don't, you know, like they're not such a huge significant memory for me, but the first Star Wars episode 4, A New Hope, was a huge impact on my life and continues to do so. And just I think in the kind of stories that I like and the kind of heroes I connect with and you know, the genres of movies that I'm really into, and that kind of passion that I think comes out of people who love those kind of movies, I think it hugely impacted upon me. So I saw them all when they came out in the movies, and then when they were all re-released, I saw them all again. I went to midnight screenings I got a little passport. Hoyts put out a little passport that every time you went to one, it got stamped. I think this was when Phantom Menace came out. I think they ran the first three. They did director's cuts of the first three director's re-releases. And they ran them at midnight.
The special editions.
Special editions. And they ran them at midnight. Must have been leading up to The Phantom Menace. And so I went with some friends. A friend of mine reminded me the other day that he came with me. I'd forgotten. But he was like, do you remember when? I was like, yes. And people were, and of course by now everybody was like, you know, so excited about another Star Wars movie. People were, cosplaying before I even knew what cosplay was, cosplaying at the movies. And, you know, I remember being at the first Star Wars, the New Hope, when they played episode 4. They opened with that, obviously, and it's like midnight and there was these guys down the front having a lightsaber fight and everybody was cheering and so exciting. So I saw them all again then, and then saw all the three prequels as well, obviously. And so I've had a very long, my entire life pretty much, because I started very young, has been in touch with Star Wars, and I have many incarnations of it. In various forms of VHS and DVD. I have a VHS box set that I got for Christmas one year of the original three. And, so it's been a long journey, me and Star Wars. So I was extraordinarily excited to have a new movie come out.
Yes, well, I also very, very strongly remember seeing the original Star Wars at the cinema when it came out in 77. I was already very well aware of it, because I subscribed to a couple of US science magazines and both science and sci-fi magazines. So there'd been some build up around it. And so I was excited. I remember buying the novelization of the movie
I read a few of those books as well, all the post novels. So go on.
Well, yeah, and that was one of the first, I suppose, for me too. It was really the first universe I could really immerse myself in so many different media, because there was the movie and the novel and the games and then the more novels and then the next movie. And so it really became this whole universe in a way that, you know, other things other than books, you know, there'd always been books that were in a series and stuff, but this was the first thing that was in all these different media. And so you could keep going back to it and discovering different parts of it. And yes, definitely had a huge impact on me. I think, someone commented that, you know, the Force Awakens is, you know, it's a Star Wars movie made by people who grew up influenced by Star Wars.
Yeah, that's so, exactly right.
Although, you know, one of the scriptwriters includes Lawrence Kasdan, who worked on Empire and Jedi. So, look, I think it was hugely influential. As a moody pubescent teen, I identified strongly with Luke, although I soon found out I was really Han, with a little bit of Chewie thrown in, I thought.
Well, I was laughing about this with a friend on Thursday, who she was like, we haven't talked about Star Wars, and she's actually a Supernatural fan, who's coming to her first con overseas, Vegas con. I talked her into one. I was like, oh my God. And we were talking about who we really connect to. And I said, it's really funny, because I remember when I first saw Star Wars, I thought Luke was just the bee's knees. Oh my gosh. I just thought he was just the cutest thing. I was so in love with Mark Hamill, and I just thought Luke was awesome. As I got older, I started to go, that Han guy is a bit good though. And I really liked that character, because I really enjoyed his kind of sassy, his sassy heroism, and, you know, he was cheeky and naughty, and he was that hero. And I kind of really gravitated towards him much more as I was growing up. Probably didn't hurt that he became Indiana Jones as well, another one of my favorite heroes of all time. But when I saw The Force Awakens, loving Han Solo all the way through it, when we finally saw Luke, my heart like leapt, and I was like, oh no, it's Luke. It's always been Luke Skywalker. And then my friend goes to me, you've got a type. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, tortured heroes with daddy issues.
I just wanted to interrupt to say, this podcast will be full of spoilers. So,
you'd have to think about that if we're going to talk about the movie.
Yeah, I think we need, it's all spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie, I'd recommend
stop listening.
Listen, listen to this after you've seen the movie, because we're going to be spoiling it.
We
up.
Might even put that in the little, you know, write that in the little thing.
We'll put the blurb under it. I think that's a good idea, because it was wonderful to see unspoiled.
I was so unspoiled, because I was like you, Jules. I stopped watching everything.
I've only seen the first big trailer.
Me too.
And then after that, I thought, no, I want to actually be able to see this and not
know anything.
Familiar with it. And look, we were lucky in Australia for one of the few times, although increasingly common, we actually got it more than 24 hours before the rest of the world. So it was a weird space to be in, because we'd seen it and we couldn't say
it. You can't say anything. I know. I was seeing people tweeting going, what's the embargo on talking about Star Wars? What's the date that we can actually talk about it on social media?
Well, it was funny because the actual press embargo was midnight in LA the day that it came out here. So I was getting ready to go and see the midnight session, and it was whatever, it's midnight in LA, it's about 9 p.m. or something here. And
the day
and
before.
And suddenly there was this flood of reviews, like my Twitter feed was just every media site uploading their Star Wars review, and I'm like, yep, I'm out of here.
I'm out of here. I was the same. I was like, don't, because I couldn't get tickets to this, because we both went and saw it in IMAX in different cities, and I couldn't get tickets to the midnight. It sold out in about 3 minutes, I think. But I went to, it was playing every 3 hours. So I went to the 6 a.m. session. I thought to myself, 3 a.m.'s a bit icky. It's kind of neither here nor there. I'll go to the 6 a.m. and then I can go to work afterwards, which is what I did. So, I was the same. I was like, just stay off everything. Keep away from everything. Just don't look at your Facebook or anything until you've seen this damn movie, and then you can go crazy. But it's, you know, like seeing it at 6 a.m. was hilarious. Because it was on at, as I said, 12 and then 3, and you know, the midnight screening's pretty normal, I think, now for a big movie. You know, they screen most of things like the Avengers movies and stuff. There's always like a midnight screening now. You know, it's the event movies all seem to get it. But having like a 3 a.m. and a 6 a.m. is not the norm. When I rock up for the 6 a.m., I got there like at about 5:30 in the morning, and it's beautiful because it's at Darling Harbour, which is a gorgeous part of Sydney. It was beautiful on the water. It was so gorgeous. It's a beautiful spot, the IMAX theatre in Sydney, and the biggest IMAX theatre in the world, screen in the world, apparently. So the sign says. But the 3 a.m. session was coming out, and it was really interesting to see, like, at 3 a.m., the people coming out, they're all dressed up, you know, half of them in cosplay. I'd be in my pajamas. And I'm like, this is like 3 a.m. in the morning. These people went to the movies. Yeah. Like, the best Kylo Ren came out, and I had my photo taken with him. I went up to him, and I was like, oh, your costume's amazing. Can I get a photo? He's like, sure. And he's an American guy. And I was like, this is a commitment, because you hadn't actually seen the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got this full costume, and he was like, yeah, I thought it was going to be pretty cool, which he was. And in the 6 a.m. session, it was funny because there was families and there was people dressed up in cosplay, including a friend of mine I used to work with who I ran into, who was underneath his Jedi robe was wearing Leia's slave girl bikini. I cannot get that image. It cannot be unseen. But there was also, because it was before work, there was also businessmen there in their suits with their briefcases, you know, catching Star Wars before heading into the office. It was hilarious.
Yeah, no, it was fun. Well, at the midnight session, of course, there were lots of people in cosplay. We had the 501st Stormtrooper Legion there.
That's huge down in Melbourne, because you've got that great big Mandalorian or whatever what they're called down there. Yes. I mean, it's always the Star Wars cosplay in at Armageddon or any of those cons down there is always absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, there was a cantina band playing. My favourite was there was a 7-year-old girl I met called Ava who was in full Rey cosplay. And at one
that's point, great.
There were two Kylo Rens in cosplay battling each other, and she's just stepped in between them with her big stick and just started going for it. So that was pretty awesome. There was also Darth Vader busking out the front.
Oh, lovely.
that. But yeah, it was funny when we came out of the movie at you know, at about 2:45 or whatever, to see the people waiting to go into the 3 o'clock. I have to say, I was wrecked the next day.
Yeah.
Oh my God! I tell you, I went into work a little late. My friend Karen, shout out to Karen, who I dragged. Well, she wanted to see Star Wars, but she wasn't convinced the midnight session was worth it. Now she is.
Yay! Woo!
But yeah, she stayed over and we had a leisurely brunch before I headed into work. But I was a little tired the next day and wanting to see it again really quickly.
Yeah. So. Oh, well, to be honest, I would have, if I hadn't have had to go to work, I actually had a Christmas party that night too. So it was like, oh, the longest day in the history of forever. But if I hadn't have had to go into work, I would have gone into town somewhere and just gone to another session that wasn't like sold out. My friend Glenn, who was wearing the Leia bikini underneath his Jedi robe, he was going straight from that session to meet another friend of ours to go to a 9:30 a.m. session in another part of the city. So, and I said, oh my God, twice. He goes, oh, I'm going to see it later again this afternoon. It's all about Star Wars today. So that's all he was doing. He did say to me, though I have to say, at 5 o'clock this morning when I'm slipping into my Leia bikini outfit, I'm thinking to myself, I really need to consider my life choices.
I think he's getting
it. I was like, it's pretty awesome. Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, so I think leading up to this movie, of course, like many people, I'd been disappointed, let's say, by the prequels, more than disappointed. And it was really hard not, like, to get excited but not get excited.
I was so excited.
Sort of going back. And then as I saw the first really big trailer, I'm like, damn it, I'm just going to go with the excitement at this point. Maybe I'm going to be bitterly disappointed, but if it's anything like that trailer, that's working for me. On the other hand, I kept thinking, oh, I just can't believe J.J. Abrams is going to, you know, pull it off, and I have my own feels about what he did with the Star Trek reboot, and so there's a lot of feels going on. I was a bit conflicted. So yes, it was a bit hard. I had steadfastly refused to buy any merch before the movie because I've been there, done that before, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not even buying a BB-8 until I see this movie.
I have a BB-8 now.
Yeah, don't we all?
I love that little guy so much. Like about 3 seconds into the movie, I was like, oh God, I've got to get a BB-8. He's awesome.
So the moment for me when I got into the cinema after suffering through the million trailers we had to watch, and let's just not talk about Superman and Batman movie at the moment because that's sad.
I'm excited. We had lame trailers, though. I can't even tell you what they were. They were so lame.
We had all the, you know, Civil War, Batman.
What? That sucks ass. I can't even tell you, like, whatever the movie was, I was like, what the hell is this piece of shit and why am I watching its trailer? No idea what they played, but they did not play Civil War, and that's what I was hoping for.
Oh. Yeah, no, they played different. We had Civil War. Oh. Anyway, we had all the big blockbuster trailers.
Damn it.
Which was good. Although it did go on forever, and at that point a few of us were going, okay, it's actually 25-1 now. We start the movie. Jesus. My choc top's melting. I want to see the movie.
I've already finished my popcorn and the movie hasn't even started.
Karen and I had dinner at like 10 o'clock, so we were...
I had popcorn and Maltesers for breakfast. It was good.
Anyway, I think the first cheer was when the Lucasfilm logo came up. Yay. And then you get the Long Time Ago and A Galaxy Far, Far Away, another cheer. And then the text crawl starts and the first line
goes,
is...
Burp, first with the big Star Wars logo and then that disappears.
Yeah, and then it has Luke Skywalker has vanished. And it was at that point I was like fist pumping and going, no, oh, so my God, we haven't started with trade negotiations or corporate restructuring within the empire.
I know.
We've started with Luke Skywalker has vanished.
We don't have to catch up on the political background.
This is going to kick ass. Because I think what it said was what we're all hoping was this is a film about these characters set in this universe, but this is a film about – you know, what you care about. And as you said, you know, you care about what happened to Luke Skywalker. And that was the moment. And I thought the opening crawl was, you know, it was really short and sharp to the point. It gave you, you know, what was happening, which was really, you know, the bad guys are back.
Under a different name, but they're back.
Different name, but, you know, and the rebels are still being rebelly. Luke Skywalker has vanished.
Ah, wow. And the princess is no longer a princess. She's a general, which I think is kick-ass.
Yes.
I thought that was awesome. I was like, woohoo. And it was so fun because, like, I've seen it twice more. I think you've seen it.
I've seen it twice altogether.
Yeah. Yes. So I've seen it twice more because I wanted to see it in 3D and then I just saw it this morning accidentally.
So I should say I saw it the first time in IMAX in 3D, so my head sort of explode.
Yeah, so I saw the first time in IMAX, then I went to normal but really big screen, but not IMAX screen, 3D, and then this morning I just saw it in normal 2D. But what was really fun, at being a big fan and being, I was so excited, like I couldn't allow myself to be disappointed. Even the bad trilogy movies, the prequels. Every single time one came out, I'd be excited, just hoping that this one would be better, you know, and I'd still get excited and then I'd get disappointed that it was just a bit lame. But I was, beside myself about this one. And I think to see it with a whole bunch of fans who've got their asses out of bed at like 4:30 in the morning to get into the city, or like you who stayed up and, you know, imagine what the 3 a.m. people were like, my God. They must have been really crazy fans. But to see it with
people... No, they were fans who just weren't good enough to get the midnight screening.
But to see it with people who love it that much, who want to be the first in the world to see this movie, who want to be there and experience it in, you know, the best possible way, and to have them all cheer. Like, everybody, as you said, they cheered when the Lucasfilms came thing, because I think we only had two trailers and we were into it pretty quick. It cheered when the Lucasfilms logo came up, cheered when a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and went ape shit when the music went and the big Star Wars logo comes up and starts drifting back. You know, everybody's like, wow, went absolutely crazy. And then watching it, every time some new great character came on, everybody cheered, you know, there's R2 under a cloth, woohoo, you know, here comes Han and Chewie, yay! Everybody was cheering and clapping, and it was so fun to see it with, like, an audience who was like me, completely beside themselves with excitement. And I've got to say, I cried about 3 times in it. And not for sad reasons, just because I was so damn happy. I was so happy.
I'm just going to pop in here to say, and because it comes up every so often, and I think the death of cinema is you know, greatly not happening, obviously, considering this film's already taken $1 billion or something. And I have friends who, you know, don't like going to the cinema, get annoyed by people around them and everything. But for me, and there is nothing better for me than going to see whatever the movie is. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the genre is, whether it's some weird indie art house shit that no one's ever heard of, or a blockbuster, or my one of my favorite ever movies franchises like Star Wars. There's nothing better than seeing it with an audience, about being part of that reaction, whatever that reaction is. I just think it just adds to the experience so much. So let alone seeing it as, you know, on big screens, and that you know, no matter how good your home cinema is, it ain't seeing it as cinema.
There's nothing like it. There's nothing like going to the cinema. I, you know, like anybody who says that it's just as good to watch it on TV, I just don't get that. Going to the movies has always been, and I think it's so influenced my life. You know, it's worked its way into my work. You know, it's It's one of my favourite things. It always has been one of my favourite things to do. Movies are one of my favourite things in the world, and going to the movies, even if I'm a, like, I go to see movies on my own a fair bit, and I love it. You know, I just love being in that space. I love being in the darkness. I love that, you know, all-encompassing feeling. You know, when you get disappear into it, and people around you laughing and clapping,
and you're just part of this.
Yeah, communal sort of enjoyment or fear, yeah. Or, you know, whatever's happening.
In a world, a multi-device world where most of us at home, you know, for a lot of things we'll watch TV while we're on our phone or our tablet,
yes.
Or whatever, to actually give all that up and put your attention to one thing for 2 hours is just brilliant. And, yeah, so there's nothing like however else you watch it, make sure you see this movie at the cinema.
Oh, it certainly deserves it. I mean, there's some movies you go to see at the cinema and you go, well, you know, it being in the cinema and being at the movies adds to the experience, but the actual on-screen experience, you know, like it's just a movie and it's not greatly affected by the expanse of the screen or anything like that. But something like this really is. See it big as possible.
And then we get straight to the action with the movie, which is fantastic. I mean, I love the fact that this is...
I love that we started with another star cruiser kind of just from beneath, you know.
Yes,
so,
rather than overhead.
It was like this real homage to the original movie, you know, like so much in it. Even the story was, you know, like an homage to the movie. And I thought, oh, here we are. You know, I remember the other one. It's like the TIE fighter goes shooting through and then the big Star Cruiser comes overhead. And then
it goes on forever.
And goes forever and ever.
Ever.
You know?
And you're like, fuck, how big is this?
How big is this ship? And this one, you saw, boom, little ships, and then this big triangle goes across the moon. And it's, you know, like I was like, wow, this is just another take on, you know, a similar kind of start. And I loved that they did that. Straight away it dragged you into, I know what this movie really is going to be, you know, really is tying back to the original feel of the original
movie. And I think it did it in a very clever way, because it wasn't simply recycling the originals,
no.
Although we might talk about aspects of the plot. But I think the visual touchstones, there were also bits of dialogue and that which were very knowingly, you know, shout
yes.
backs to iconic lines. But I think it hit the nostalgia button in a really good way, so that I think it was about making it feel part of the same universe, but also stylistically related very much to the first three movies, so that you felt, as you said, there was almost that comfort of seeing things that you're familiar with and you know, putting on the old slippers sort of thing, but not in a way that's like, you know what's going to happen next. And that was one of my delights in not knowing how the plot was going to unfold and finding things that are different. So, you know, we end up on this planet that looks very much like Tatooine, you know, with a droid in the desert over sand dunes, which is very much like the 3PO R2-D2 start.
Yeah, a child left behind.
Yeah, BBA. But it's different. It's a different yeah. world. It's a different, you know, our lead character is different. She's on her own. So you're both comforted, but you're taken into this new world. And I think, like, overall, stepping back in the franchise, this is a bridging movie. It's a bridge between the first three movies and the three movies and whatever other spin-off movies are to come. But I was very much saying, you know, We're drawing that line very much from, you know, the end of Return of the Jedi through to here. You know, trust us. We're in a space, you know. We've got characters that you're familiar with, but there's new stuff. It's a new world. There are new characters. There's a new generation. But don't be afraid. Yes. And I think that's very clever for those of fans like us. And then for new fans, though, whether they, you know, probably obviously have seen the original Star Wars, or even for people who haven't, it was not feeling like
you needed
to know all that. It very much drew
you know, its
it
own.
Was all new. It was, a new, there wasn't the Empire anymore. It was now the First Order. They were new. You know, the rebellion was different now. We didn't have a princess anymore. We had a general. And I think you could walk into that without having a hell of a lot of background and be able to pick it up without any trouble at all. It felt like a new story, whereas, as you say, it still felt very much grounded in the original universe.
Definitely. And what did you think of our first meeting with Rey? And what did you think about Rey?
I love Rey. Oh, my gosh. I love Rey. And it wasn't until I kind of went away and thought about her and thought, isn't it great that the hero of this movie is this really great chick? She's just, you know, I loved every time that Finn tried to grab her hand. She's like, why are you holding my hand? And I'm okay. And like where he sort of said, are you okay, straight away, she's like, oh my god, why is he even asking? She was just great. I really loved her straight away. She was kind of a little quirky, and you know, she's a little stars in her eyes about, you know, all the stories about space that she's obviously heard. And
I love the fact that she's like a fangirl almost.
Yeah,
you see,
yeah.
Beginning, she's got a little handmade
pilot's
doll in the orange jumpsuit, and she has the helmet that, you know, while she's eating her shitty dinner.
I love that bread though. Where do we get that bread that instantly makes when you add it to water? Woof.
I don't think you'd love it, really.
Oh, awesome.
So you get, as you said, you get this girl, you know, who's heard a bit like Luke, you know, who had heard the
yes.
stories of the, you know, who dreamed of being part of something bigger and you know, had heard these stories. And when she meets Han, of course, you know, we have the lovely contrast of she's like, oh, you're the famous smuggler. And Finn's like, you're the famous general. It's like,
yeah. And he's like, famous, isn't he? And Chewie's like, oh, I don't know.
I love the fact that Daisy plays there are many moments, and with Finn particularly as well, that these are young people in both their vulnerability but also their enthusiasm too, like when they've had their first, when they escape on the Millennium Falcon from Jakku, and they're both so excited about how well they did. I mean, I really loved that enthusiasm. Like, these weren't angst-ridden, take-yourself-too-seriously characters.
Not at all.
And they were both at a point in their life where they're thrown into something very new and very different. And in a way, I mean, I think the parallel between Finn and Rey is they've both grown up in very isolated, bizarre conditions. You know, she's been abandoned on this planet by her family and had to survive. And that's forced her to learn, obviously, all these skills, you know, mechanical skills and piloting skills. But she's been alone. She's you know, had a very difficult, arduous existence. You know, Finn's been stolen from his family and grown up in whatever, brainwashed and grown up, trained as a stormtrooper, and so the fact that, you know, both of them come from these backgrounds which give them great, you know, good survival skills, both emotionally and technically, if you like, but they're also a bit at sea as far as, you know, being out in the big wide world goes. So I really liked that, and it sort of explains a lot about their connection with each other as well.
Yeah. No, I thought one of the great things about this movie was the new characters that they introduced. You know, it was lovely to see the existing characters, even like the ones that you don't even really know who they are, like that guy with the foldy face that flies the X-Wings.
Yes,
I don't know who he is, but he's been in all those movies, some little alien fella.
Admiral
Ackbar is in there, and you know, it's nice just to see those familiar faces. And of course, Han and Chewie and Leia. And
I didn't realize it was actually Admiral Ackbar. I thought it was, you know, maybe his
another
fish face.
Another fish face,
but it was actually
they must live a long time and don't age, apparently, whatever that species of alien is. That's all that fish oil.
Right for your skin.
But yeah, so it was great to see all those characters, and I was super excited to see those characters, and it was probably what I was looking forward to the most. But what took me so surprise was how much I liked the new characters, yeah, and how excited I am now about the new characters. And especially seeing the movie more than once, and you see it the next time and the next time, I love the new characters. Yeah. I want to know about them. I'm rooting for them, you know, the good and the bad. And, you know, I'm really interested in them. And I think that was amazing that they've created these fabulous characters that could stand toe-to-toe with the characters that you've been in love with for however many years, but be as interesting and as interested in what happens to them. You know, I thought that was fabulous. And it was really unexpected. I did not know I was going to walk out of there and go,
yeah, the funny thing
I love was, Rey, I love Finn, I love Poe, I love Kylo Ren. Oh, my God.
the funny. So we open, of course, with Poe, the best pilot fighter there is. Pilot
in the Rebellion.
The Rebellion has. And it was funny, the minute he appeared, I'm like, that hot pilot's going to be really popular because, oh my God, Oscar Isaac's just like the minute he appears, he's just, oh, he's so fucking sexy. And
even just his opening lines, I speak first, you speak first, who speaks first, I speak first. He's just sassy, yeah, straight away. Sassy straight away.
He's sassy, you know, but he's got the sort of straight down the line hero stuff, but he's sassy and he's also just so fucking sexy, and funny, and the, you know,
and the best pilot in the Rebellion.
Yeah. And I predicted from the moment he and Finn met up that was going to be the big pairing fandom was going to love.
I love them. I love them when they hugged, when they're like, oh, yeah, they're like, that's my oh, jacket. My God. I was, that's my jacket. It looks good on you. I was like, oh, I love them.
Again, you know, that was, I think, the three of them, the interactions, plus the interactions, you know, Finn and Rey get to have with Chewie and Han. These are really likable characters. We don't need to be too sold on. I mean, I think the casting is just brilliant. And of course, with, if you haven't read it, with Oscar Isaacs, he was actually meant to die in the first bit of the movie, but for whatever, you know, JJ saw something there and decided to bring him back because he was, obviously recognized he was fucking awesome.
I didn't know that.
No, he was actually meant to die when you think he
when
dies.
He crashed on.
Yeah, Jackson. And so, but he did, yeah, he basically rang him up and said, you're not going to, decided you're not going to die.
No, I think that was smart. Oh, my gosh.
Because I think he's, I look forward to him being in the next movie. Now, John Boyega I knew from Attack the Block, one of my favorite movies. Years ago. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Well, oh, you'll love it.
Okay.
So Attack the Block was a horror movie set in a, whatever you call them, in whatever country you're listening from. We'd call them a housing commission, so public housing estate.
So it's an English one? Because I know he's an English one.
Yep. And he's like the, it was made a few years ago now, so he's like the teenaged hero of that movie, which is a brilliant, must see. Okay. Everyone go and see it. And so I have no doubt why anyone who'd seen that movie wouldn't have gone, yeah, I want him in my movie. because again, and I think like Daisy Ridley as Rey, he has this wonderful combination of, you know, they're both competent, but they've got some vulnerability. They're funny. Like, there's a real humanity about them that I think, and I think interestingly, them being the same age-ish, which is a different dynamic than we had, say, in the original Star Wars, where, you know, Luke and Leia obviously are the same age, but Luke and Han are very different in age experience, whereas, you know,
having, called him kid all the time, you know.
Yeah, so having the peers like these, it is like the new generation running amok and discovering stuff and getting in on the action. And I loved that. And I thought their friendship was just fantastic. And as I said, one of my favourite scenes is when they've won that first battle and they're just jumping up and down like, oh, my God, oh, my God.
I really liked it when Finn's like, when she goes, you're with the Rebellion. He's like, yes. Yes, I am. I'm with the Rebellion. I'm with the Rebellion. This is what we look like, some of us. Some of us look like other things. I was just like this most awkward, ridiculous lie.
His comedy is wild. I mean, really, he sells that so well. And I think
this movie was really funny. Like, I was quite, I mean, the original Star Wars are all funny. They've all got really good lines. But I was quite surprised by how funny this movie was. I was laughing a lot.
Well, I think, again, I think the casting helped a lot because I just think the particularly Daisy and John have got a really good natural comedic timing and could carry it in a way that it felt really natural to the characters, not, oh, here's a funny one-liner. Mm. And, of course, you know, then they get to bounce off you know, Han Solo. So,
yeah.
You can't have a better comedy team up than anyone with Han. So. And how was it when? How did you feel when we meet Han and Chewie again?
Oh gosh! See, that was the trailer. When that trailer released, I burst into tears.
Yeah.
At the end of that trailer, where they jump on the Millennium Falcon and go, "Chewie, we're home." I remember watching that on my laptop. I think like on a Saturday morning, and I was like 6 o'clock in the morning or something. And oh no, it was on my phone, and I burst into tears. So I was pretty excited to have them back, and I just love that they haven't changed. At all, they're just their banter.
Same shirt, different shirt.
Yeah, and it was just Chewie is still just as, you know, like, I talk my way out of it. What do I talk my way out of everything? You know, like he's just constantly. They're like this funny old married couple.
Oh,
you have no idea what Chewie's really saying, but you know, you get a gist of it. And it was great to have them back. And I loved. I loved reading about when they shot that scene, when they first brought Han and Chewie onto the Millennium Falcon, and how pretty much everybody who was working on the movie came into the studio and they said it was just, they came to watch and there was just this complete silence at sort of reverence of what this moment meant to have these two characters back on the Millennium Falcon. And I thought that when Han moves off on his own and he goes and he stands on the bridge and kind of looks out the window and he's smiling, and I was like, oh my God, I got really teary. I was like, this is so great. I can't even. But it was just, they were just so great. There were so many wonderful moments between them. I loved it when they were standing outside and they were about to they were out in the cold and they were about to, you know, like go blow everything up, and Chewie's like, rah, 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 and he goes, like, oh, you're cold.
And then later on Chewie gives him a jacket.
He hands him the jacket. Sorry. It was just such gold, you know, or Chewie like getting injured and then telling that woman how brave he was.
Yeah.
You're very brave. And I just, it was just lovely to have them. They felt, you know, like you said, it felt very familiar because they had that relationship, that there's a, such a natural ease between the Chewbacca character and Han, and the actors playing those roles. It's just, it's really easy, and there's this really natural comedy between them, and it was wonderful to have them. And I do love Han Solo.
And look, I love them.
And I love Chewbacca.
It felt very natural the way the relationship with Rey developed, particularly that, you know, she is a version of himself. You know,
yeah.
She loves the ship. She knows the ship. She she can get herself out of a tight squeeze. And I love
kept saying the same thing at the same time.
Yeah, and I'm reluctant. Yeah, you know, Chewie really likes.
Chewie really likes.
So you know that felt, you know, and here's a young girl who's been alone all her life, and suddenly, you know, and you get the sense from the bit we've seen on her life on Jakku, you know, she didn't have any mates. You know, every interaction she had was a deal or a struggle, or you know, she wasn't. You know, she didn't have a gang of people to hang out with. And so, and finally here's someone she both looks up to and she's, you know, heard of. And you know, they just click. And I just thought that was, yeah, that was just gorgeous.
Me too.
It was.
I know. They were very cute together as well.
Now, the other bit I liked, I have to mention this because it doesn't get enough mentioning in any of the reviews, were the tentacle monster things.
They were awesome. What were they called?
The Boros. No, that was...
They were rat something, weren't they? Rathas?
Yes.
Rathas or something? Yes. Oh, my God. I love the way they rolled.
They were fantastic.
They rolled. Big balls of tentacles and teeth. They were fantastic.
Oh, look, I was like, I don't know what this is. Like, this is just an action sequence with monsters, and I'm loving it.
I loved it, too. As soon as I saw the first one rolling down the hall, do you know what I loved about it, too, was when they went to light speed, when it was trying to hang on, and it was just this eyeball on the front going whoop off the side. Just nice little touches, I thought, like that. But I agree. I love those things. They were weird. And I just love that they rolled.
Now, the nice thing we had, well, part of this story, I suppose, is that it is set 30 years after Jedi and that things have moved on. I love the fact that, and what you often get with franchises, and I know particularly because, like me, you're very much into the horror franchises where we have many, many, many films. often when you get stars or characters from the original returning, it's almost a bit like they've been in a time capsule, that they don't necessarily feel like they've had a life over the last, 30 years. Often they've been living in a cabin or something. Yeah. But yeah. I really love
asylum or something.
Yeah, I really love the fact that here both Leia and Han they've had a life and there's had tragedy in it. And I saw someone complaining that Han and Leia didn't get their happy ever after. Well, who the fuck does? And I loved their relationship, the fact that here was a relationship that had been fractured by grief. It wasn't that they hated each other. It wasn't, it was the fact that, this terrible thing had happened involving their son, and that had been so too much for either of them to bear and stay in that relationship, but not that they'd ever fallen out of love with each other. And I thought that was, that was wonderful tribute to those characters and to them coming back together again. But also the fact that we're honouring that these characters had a life, and we don't, there's lots that we don't know about what happened in that 30 years. We know, one key event maybe. And I like the fact that they say, we both went back to the things we were familiar with. So she's, she's the strategist leading the troops because that's what she knows. Han's off back to smuggler again with Chewie because that's what he knows. They've gone back to one thing that part of their identity that they feel some safety and comfort in, because being parents and being in that relationship was something that got taken away from them in a way, or that got blown up. And I just loved that. I loved the fact that, I could have done with a million more scenes with them together, but I loved the fact that we got that sense of, there's a sadness there, but there's also, the fact that, it was a deep love that, just couldn't bear what was put on it. And to me, that means more than them having had a happy ever after.
No, I liked it. I even liked, there was even everybody knew, Mars is like, go home, to Han, because, everybody knew that they loved each other, but, that this terrible thing happened and it sent them spiraling and they had to go off and do their own things to be able to, that was the only way that they could deal with it. But there was never any second that you didn't doubt that the love was always there and remained, regardless of their distance. And, I'm the same. I mean, they didn't get their happy ending, but I really liked so much the moments that we saw with them together held such depth.
Yeah, and
also still, I'm trying to be nice, when did that ever work? There's still sort of the same relationship as well that we know of them, because that was never going to change. She was never going to, change. She was always going to be, they're always going to be cheeky to each other. That's what they always were. And it was nice to see that was still alive, but you definitely knew that the love was there as well.
And I think it made It can often feel when you have people, again, people returning to a franchise, some sort of like, oh yeah, we've just got the old actors in because, you know, people like them, but we don't really know why they're in the story or, you know, and it just sort of is a bit of an embarrassment all round. Whereas, you know, they were obviously integral to this story. And look, one of my favourite things in the whole movie was, and again, not that we got much of it, but this relationship between Leia and Rey, just that sense of, and I know there's been a lot of talk about Rey's parentage and I don't know what it is, and you know, we could speculate for a whole nother podcast on that, but I thought just
it's going to be not what we think probably.
Probably, just that relationship of you know, the general and this young fighter, you know, new to this whole world, and I just loved it. And mirroring that, which was gorgeous, was that Carrie Fisher's actual daughter is in the movie. You can spot her. She's the one who's got like Princess Leia
hair.
She's blonde.
Says something. She turns and says something. She's operating some console.
Yeah. And I just, that whole thing, I love very much. And I really hope the next movie we get, you know, we got more of Leia and Rey, because I just thought that was wonderful. And the scene when they're comforting each other after she comes back, after the Starkiller's blown up and Han's died, is just, that hug was everything. And then when she farewells her off on search for, you know, and the fact
May the Force be with you.
Yeah, and the fact that Rey gets charged with going off on the,
I know,
the search for Luke just felt...
I was just happy that Chewie had a friend again.
Well, and yeah.
I didn't want to be Chewie to be on his own.
No. Very, very good.
Yeah, it was very, very good.
So now to Kylo.
I love him.
Amy.
I love him. I had forgotten, because I'm an idiot, because I had stopped reading everything. Like, I read stuff, you know, way back when the casting was all happening, and of course I watched the first couple of trailers, and then I stopped, and I totally forgot. I mean, I remembered Daisy and John, but I forgot who was playing Kylo Ren, so when he took off his helmet, I was like, I forgot that Adam Driver was playing him. And I was like, oh my God, I forgot. And I love him. He's wonderful. And what I really loved about him is, one, he's young. Yeah. Like, and there, you, when he took off his helmet, it's like, oh yeah, of course, he's going to be quite young, isn't he? So it was quite shocking as well to see this really horrible villain who's like doing these terrible things and killing a whole communities and stuff like that to be this really young man.
Yeah.
And that was initially a really big shock. And then I just, I was saying to a friend of mine, you know, Vader was such a great villain, but he was a villain.
Yeah.
Like, there was really no gray in Vader. Not until the very, very end when he ended up, you know, saving Luke, and it was only in those final moments of that battle, though, that you saw hesitation in him. But before then, you never saw any of it. He was all dark side.
Almost, he was almost not human.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, exactly, obviously, the whole costume thing emphasised that, and the whole.
And we know that he had hardly any bits of him left because it all got burnt off in the lava.
Lava bits.
God, no wonder he was pissed off. But with Kylo Ren, you didn't get that at all. You got this very troubled, you could feel that he was a troubled young person, you know, and when he stood in front of his father and had that moment of saying, you know, I'm being torn apart, and you could truly believe that there was, in this moment, he didn't know what direction he was going to go. You know, he was saying to Han, you know, I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I can do it. Will you help me? And in our brains, we're all screaming, oh my God, because we all knew what was going to happen. No. And then, you know, but I'm in my heart, I could truly believe that he was being torn apart and he didn't know if he could do it. And he knew that the only way to the power of the dark side was to do this terrible thing, but he just didn't know if he was going to be capable of it.
Yeah.
And it was that really nice sort of graze of his emotions that you could believe in him. And it made me go, I can get behind this bad guy, because I know that he's not, as you say, a robotic bad guy who's just all bad. He is this, you know, has been probably manipulated and coerced by the supreme leader fellow into the dark side.
Gollum.
Yeah, Gollum. It was Gollum.
Darth Gollum.
That's hilarious. But, you know, he's been, for whatever reason, he's been coerced by the dark side, and Darth Gollum has taken him there. But you know that, you know, there's got to be as much light in him as there is dark. And that moment standing on the bridge with his father, I thought there was just so much sadness in him, and that I just loved him. I was just like, ah, apart from the fact that Adam Driver's awesome and he looks amazing. And you know, I loved, you know what I loved? And I only thought about this today, I might be a bit slow, but I loved that when he took off his Kylo Ren helmet and his hair is kind of so long, it's almost still like the Darth Vader hat.
Oh, that's interesting, yes.
It's exactly the same shape and length, and I was like, I wonder if they purposely did that, because he still
He went into the Starkiller stylist and said, I just don't know what to do with it. I'm thinking,
can you give it a Vader?
Vader helmet look?
Can I have the Vader? But, like, I wondered if it was purposeful, because it actually, when he stood up and he's got the big robe on and everything, from behind, it still looked like, you know, it was still Vader-esque, and of course we know that Vader's obviously his hero, because he had the little chat to his... And I was like, how did he get the helmet? Because I actually watched Return of the Jedi last night, yeah. And, you know, that's, you know, Luke Burns.
You know what fans are like. They'll get shit.
They'll get shit. It was like, they'll somehow he went and got that from the moon of Endor. He got that helmet from the moon of Endor.
It was on Endor eBay the next day, I reckon. Those fucking little Ewoks.
Fanboy got it.
Those little Ewoks would have been picking over that funeral pyre.
They would have been.
And
flogging it all on eBay.
Flogging off everything. I think what we got with Kylo was what we didn't get with Anakin, and that was, you know, we know all about the fact that, you know, hate leads to anger and anger leads to the dark side, and we never got that with Anakin. We got sort of, you know, surly whininess, but we see a couple of times with Kylo when he just, you know, things don't go his way, and he lashes out with his homemade lightsaber, and that's brilliant, because, you know, that's what you're meant to see. This is not, you know, a fully, as you said, fully on the dark side, fully Vader type villain. But you need to, where's that passion? All we know is that, you know, he's Leia and Han's son, and something happened that meant that, you know, he destroyed everything that Luke had been building with the new generation of Jedis. And
killed them all.
Killed them all, and that's horrific, and you need to believe that this is someone who could do that, and there needs to be a depth of passion in him, and you know, as you said, a mixture of light and dark, but you need to believe that, and I think we really saw that. You know, obviously we start with the slaughtering of a whole lot of villagers, but it was almost more the very relatable anger over, yeah, you know, shit isn't going my way.
Yeah,
lash out. The second just, one, the did really get a huge so, laugh
with the stormtroopers. That's what I was gonna say. I loved that one. I mean, I really actually loved the guy who had to come in and tell him that he'd got away, that they'd got away on the Millennium Falcon, and his fear was so great. I was like, this guy's really good. Yeah. He's like wincing and shaking as Kylo, and then Kylo says, anything else? Yeah. And it's like, well, there's this girl by the throat. But yeah, I laughed myself as well. Those stormtroopers are like, see all this stuff flying. They're like, oh, turn around, about face, look the other way. We're out of here. He's gone crazy again. But he, yeah, you're right. He was giving into the anger, which, you know, a Jedi cannot do. And you saw this rage inside him that must be, for whatever reason, is driving him, and you know, is what is probably making the dark side so accessible to him, because he's got this anger inside of him. But
yeah, and two characters that I do have a few issues with. One was General Weasley.
The Ginger. The Ranger General.
General Ranger. General Weasley, who I didn't actually realise was a Weasley until afterwards, because I'm not a Harry Potter fan. Bill.
Yeah, Bill.
And I didn't realise that until after the movies, but in my head in the movie, I'm like, oh, one of the Weasleys went dark.
He was one of the Weasleys.
Yeah, so I found that out afterwards. I would have liked to find out a bit more about him, because we get the sense that, you know, he's got a position that's in some ways equal to or superior to Kylo.
I think he's superior to. Yeah, I got a general, definite sense he was higher in ranking.
Yes, and we didn't get to see him much more.
And not scared of him either. He didn't seem to have that fear that everybody else had around Ren. You know,
Darth Gollum. I did have an issue with Darth Gollum. I think we would have been Supreme Leader Snoke. I think we would have been better off not seeing Snoke. A bit like
I got a little confused at first because he was so large. I was like, yes, dude, this guy's a giant. Wait a minute.
It wasn't quite obvious that it was a hologram of someone.
I got it pretty quickly, but I did initially go, oh my god, there's like a giant race of people that are...
I think you're in good company there. I think we all do. I like the idea that he's a bit like the Wizard of Oz, and that when
he
meet
is
him,
the Wizard of Oz,
he'll actually be the size of a cat.
I actually said that the other day to someone. I said, you know, he's the Wizard of Oz, right? He's just
he'll
back
be a little,
there
he'll
doing
be a little
buttons.
Hobbit size.
Funnily, he'll be Gollum size.
But I think his physical or hologrammed presence didn't add anything, and in some ways I would have preferred just to hear his voice, I think, because he was distracting in that way. And because we know absolutely nothing about him, like where was he during everything that's happened before this movie? We've never heard of him before.
I know, but that's the thing about him was that I found quite intriguing is when I realised he was a hologram, that his face is so looks burnt or disfigured in some way, and I thought, oh, I wonder what the reason is behind that. And so I found myself wondering what his, as you say, what is kind of, we haven't heard of him, but I'm assuming we hadn't heard of all the leaders of the you know, in the Empire.
Oh, sure, but he does appear to be, he is the Supreme Leader now.
I know, but where did Ren come from? You know what I mean? He's now the boss of the Knights of Ren, Kylo Ren is, yeah. You know, so they've obviously, in the last 30 years, there's obviously been some people manoeuvring their way up to the top. So sure. I didn't really have issue with that. I had issue with the fact that it wasn't clear it was a hologram at first, and I did think he was a giant. But I did actually find him intriguing because he is so obviously disfigured in some way. He's not like just a weird alien-looking guy. He looks like he's been burnt or something horrible
has led to a lot of speculation about whether he's someone we have met before.
Yeah, exactly. Is he someone we've met before?
I suppose I would have liked just a little bit of... you know, maybe him referring to a bit more about Jedi lore or just something to give us some bit more, like with General Weasley, a bit more about who he is and why.
Well, I figure that we're going to get that. I feel like we're going to get that in the next one because Snoke said, bring Kylo Ren and you come to me, you know. Yeah. So Weasley and Kylo are off to Gollum guy, and I'm assuming we'll see those three in that kind of environment, and maybe we'll find out more. But we don't know who he is. I agree with you on the general. I kind of was like, this is really interesting because he's obviously not scared of Kylo Ren. He seems to be the only person who's not scared of him. He's kind of almost talking down to him, like he's he's useless in some ways, and shows no fear, and really didn't show any fear in front of the Supreme Leader as well. Even when everything was going to shit, he just walked in and went, everything's going to shit, and the Supreme Leader wasn't like, you failure or anything the Emperor would have been.
He seemed pretty confident in his own competence in his role there. Now, one character I felt and I hope we get to see much more of her, was Captain Phasma, played by the wonderful Gwendolyn Christie, who people know as Brienne of Tarth from Game of Thrones. And I'm hoping we get a lot more of her in the next movie, because she was very lightly used in
very
this
lightly.
One. I'm like, hey, what? I was thinking there may have been a scene between her and Finn when
that
he sent to her. Yeah, that we didn't see.
Maybe.
I hope so, because she...
Because she did talk about that, you know, he was sent for reconditioning or whatever. Yeah. What she said. She was very shiny and looked amazing. I did question the fact that the stormtroopers, including her, have to walk around holding their guns all day. Like, can they not put something that they can strap them on? Have you noticed that they all hold them in front of themselves?
Nobody said being a stormtrooper was going to be easy.
I was like, oh my gosh.
I love the little line about that he took his helmet off without permission, and I thought, wow, that says so much about how they keep their dehumanizing them, from relating to
and
each
have
other.
No they have no
you're
name.
You're not going to know who you're standing next to,
unless
you ask them, because you all look the same.
I love the line with her when Han's like, is there a garbage chute? Is there a trash compactor? I was like, woo.
Maz Kitana.
Well, I liked her. She was great.
Yeah, I know has caused a lot of divide.
Why?
She is a, well, I suppose some people felt she was a bit too Yoda-esque. Some people didn't like how she looked.
I loved her. I love the googly eyes.
I thought she was great. I did wonder... Look, one of the things, and I accept it because it's one of the things the Star Wars verse has always done, is has these, you know, incredibly diverse-looking aliens, you know, as per the cantina and as per, you know, when we see some of them fighting with the rebels and everything. Mm. Yet we don't ever find out anything about their cultures. It's all very human-centric.
Yeah.
And occasionally we visit, you know, where the Ewoks live or where the Wookiees live or something. But
I often do wonder what the evolutionary reason is to behind some of their looks, because, you know, aliens obviously have to evolve into a certain physicality due to their environment.
So why is Admiral Ackbar walking around breathing air when he's a fish?
or like when I was watching Return of the Jedi last night, that blue elephant thing that plays the keyboards in Jabba's place. I love him so much.
Basically, they're all under the rules of Muppet evolution. That's where it comes from. There are special rules for the evolution of Muppets in the universe. That's exactly where it comes from. Because I was thinking, Kanata was played by Lupita Nyong'o, who's an amazing actress, and I was thinking, like, couldn't they have just had her looking like her and playing? Like, I suppose it felt like, and I quite liked her look.
I like that she's hot for Chewie.
Like, I actually think I would have liked the character more if she was just Lupita Nyong'o. Again, you don't have to explain anything about why a very young woman is 1,000 years old and running this bar. That's a small, observation. The one thing that did annoy me, though, is we don't know what happened to Maz, because the ship gets blown up, and we never, no one ever says, Maz.
Poor Maz, a whole thousand years.
So I assume she probably had a good bunker
building another one.
An escape hatch or something. But
What did you think of? I thought it was really interesting when Finn went off and Rey went off running after Finn, and then she ended up downstairs finding the lightsaber.
Yeah.
That we had Maz going to Han. So who's the girl? But we never heard his answer, and we cut away from that.
Yeah.
I thought that was so interesting. I was like, oh, my God, does he know? And is that why we're not hearing it?
Oh, look, I think there's a number of comments about the girl.
Because Kylo calls her the girl.
Yes, there's a girl with them that suggests, you know, there may be a mythology or rumors around about a girl.
That's a good one.
And I think that's just very clever, because that's why we're all speculating about, do we know her? You know, is she Luke's daughter, is she Han's daughter, is
yeah
Luke and Leia's daughter.
Neo.
Okay, I'm on that ship alone. So yeah, I think that was well done. The idea that we don't really know if the other characters know who she is, if you know. Part of me thinks I think it'd just be cool if, you know, her parentage is irrelevant.
Yeah. She's just strong with the Force.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? We may find out.
She might be attached to some other family we don't know about or something. Who knows? But no, I liked Maz, and I liked that it was like a throwback to the old, you know, Guido Cantina on Tatooine, and I didn't mind the way she looked. I liked her big glasses. I thought she was fun, and I was the same though. I was like, wonder what happened to her. Okay? We saw her running out, and then that's the last we ever saw of her.
And look, I think it's good to establish, you know, as much as you can in one movie, some people outside of the rebellion who are allies. So that we know that, you know, we know then if shit goes down for Rey, that she, you know, she knows there's, you know, there's Maz
there's
out there
out
that
there,
she can
yeah.
turn to as an ally, because she doesn't really have anyone out there because she hasn't been out there. So, and she's obviously headed straight to Luke, so she hasn't had time to make some mates on the way, although Chewie obviously would have a few connections.
Oh, he'd have loads, yeah.
What did you think about the fact that we leave with Finn unconscious at the end of the movie?
Yeah,
I found that a little frustrating.
Yeah, like, I thought
he could have been injured and unable to go, but conscious.
I thought it was interesting when she, like, kissed him on the forehead or whatever and said, I know we'll meet again, which, I mean, obviously means that they will. But, yeah, I was the same. I was like, oh, gosh, he's still unconscious. He can't even – I guess I'm not really sure what the – he was obviously very badly hurt, but I'm not really sure what the time frame was.
He could have been really badly hurt but conscious.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Okay. They could have had him with lots of tubes and or whatever. You know, it could have made it obviously that he couldn't travel with her. Or, you know, but he was alive. And, yeah, it just felt a bit strange. Like, why keep him unconscious? I mean, it's not like he knew anything that was going to that not telling her was going to be a plot point or anything. So, yeah, it was just an interesting choice, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, it didn't bother me. I thought it was sad that she was leaving while he was still unconscious.
Yeah.
And it didn't bother
me
from
a
story point.
No, it wasn't bothered me, but it was just more like, he's going to wake up.
He's going to wake up and go, where is she? We don't know. Well, we don't know. She might have just been, I mean, we know this isn't going to happen, but she might have just been, you know, I'm just going to pop over and see Luke and then I'll be back. But we know that, you know, it's not going to happen. But.
Well, we don't know, again, what he's going to do. I mean, he, in some ways, sort of fulfills partly the Han role in that, you know, he has no ties to the rebellion. He just wanted to get out of being a stormtrooper. So, you know, maybe that's partly why not saying goodbye, because he didn't have to say, oh, I'll be here, or, you know.
Yeah, we don't know what he's going to be doing.
Because I want to hide or something.
Yeah.
So maybe it saved them having to pin down exactly where he's going to be. It'll be interesting what the time jump is between this movie and the next one.
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know.
What did you think of the? I mean, you talked a bit before about when we finally see Luke. Were you frustrated we didn't see him earlier in the movie?
No, I wasn't. I didn't know that because I didn't know anything about it. But it actually wasn't. I didn't find it frustrating. I found it probably the opposite. I was like looking, you know, like the anticipation to Luke was really great. That everybody was talking about him all the time. You know, yes, I knew Luke. I thought he was, you know, I didn't think he actually existed. I thought he was a myth. And, you know, Luke, you know, how stupid of me want him back. Everybody was talking about him all the time, but we weren't seeing him. And I found that really intriguing. And so that when, you know, we found out, and I knew that, you know, we were looking for him and there was a hole in the map, and so we weren't going to be able to find him. So, you know, I wasn't frustrated by that at all. I actually really liked the way it played out. I thought he looked amazeballs when he turned around. I thought, I was thinking to myself today, They were very lucky with the two lead heroes of Star Wars that they kept their hair nicely because they both had brilliant hair. They both had amazing hair because I was like, well, lucky. Harrison still has, you know, Han Solo hair, essentially, just grey, and Luke just has all the hair. I was quite lucky. But I thought I just loved him turning around in his full, like, Obi-Wan Jedi kind of outfit and, you know, all hairy and rugged looking, and he looked amazing. I was so excited to see him. I was like,
I thought it was interesting that I think it was Lawrence Kasdan who worked on the script said they had played with having Luke appear earlier in the movie, but every time they thought about that, the movie becomes all about Luke.
Yeah.
Because this movie was about other things. It was like, as soon as you got Luke there, no one gives a shit about the new characters or anything. It's like,
well,
all about
yeah.
So I think it was a clever play. I have to say, shout out to Karen, whose first comment after the movie was, my question is, how does he get his groceries delivered up there? Which is a good point.
Like, yeah, well, maybe he
deliver.
Probably. Maybe he eats like that weird sort of stuff that Yoda ate. I mean, how did Yoda get all his stuff delivered to the Dagobah system? I mean, he ate all those weird little things.
Yeah, he looked like he was living in a place with a bit more
greenery
around. You know,
maybe he fishes.
Basically,
there was ocean.
Slate and grass.
And fish.
Well, maybe. There was a lot of water. but yes, no, and I thought, and her holding out the lightsaber to him was just so beautifully symbolic.
Yeah.
And, yes, very
wonderful. I know, it was very wonderful. And then I went, no, I have to wait 18 months to see the next one. It's like torture. How mean.
It certainly is.
It really is. But it was great. I absolutely loved it. I couldn't have... it feels like Star Wars to me. It feels like the same energy and the same excitement and the same fun and, you know, new characters feel so right.
To touch on the fact that, you know, look, in some ways the plot is exactly the same as...
Pretty much.
The first three movies is like there's bad people who want to get Luke Skywalker and there's a scrappy band of rebels who have to blow up a weapon that can destroy planets.
And then they blow the planet up.
Yeah. And so that's basically the plot again.
And they still had to shoot into a hole.
Yeah. Which I think would have been a bit more annoying to me if the fact was it really didn't matter because it was all about the characters.
Yeah.
So in a way... And we can argue about whether they – and I mean, they do make fun of the fact that, you know, it's not a Death Star. It's a – you know, it's 15 times the size. Whether they could have come up with another plot or not.
But I kind of liked that because I kind of felt like it was almost like them saying, okay, we're bringing it back home. You know, like, so –
I think they did that – to be honest, I think they did that in enough ways with the dialogue references, with the visual references. I think they could have moved on from, you know,
the blowing up the Death Star.
Well, having exactly the same weapon. For me, it did open up some of the things, and I don't know if we'll find out about them maybe in some of the other material that'll come out. But, you know, supposedly the, you know, New Order's had to rebuild itself from the ashes of what was left after the last movie, but they've still managed to turn a planet into a weapon. And why has the Republic waited this long to blow it up? Because obviously it ain't hidden. I thought, as I said, watching the movie didn't bother me, but then afterwards I'm thinking they could have at least had, oh, you know, they were going to release a space virus or something or something else that was just different enough from the same plot. But, like, it's a small complaint and, it, you know, again, watching it, it didn't matter because it's about the characters and where it takes
them.
And
it was so fun. I mean, I came out and someone said to me, what's it like? And I said, it's Star Wars because essentially it's Star Wars Take Two. But that didn't bother me even remotely because it just felt so good just to be back in that in that universe and have it feel so right and have all the characters feel so right, the new characters and the existing characters, and just the dialogue to feel so spot on to what I remembered, and just to have that feeling that the original Star Wars still gives me every time I watch it, to have that feeling come through with this movie, it's all I really cared about. And you know, I just think that, I mean, I honestly, I just think they nailed it. I can't think of anything that I can say, gee, I wish they, or you know, I wish they hadn't, or anything like that, because I just came out and I went, whoop, they nailed that fucking movie. You know, they absolutely nailed it.
Now I'm anxious about the next one, and it's like, it's going to be as good.
It's going to be, oh, and I love that JJ is kicking himself that he's not directing it.
Well, there you go.
He's like going, why did I say I wouldn't direct the second one? He's really having regret, which is something apparently he doesn't do, but he is having regret over this one. But I honestly think they nailed it. I mean, it was great to have someone like Lawrence Kasdan back on board writing it, who knew the characters and knew the style and knew the dialogue. And, you know, that was, you know. And then to know that he's a fanboy, and then to have someone like JJ, who is also a fanboy, wanting to give it referential treatment, you know, I think that was a really good thing.
Yeah, look, I think the planets literally did align very well for it. There was minimal lens flare, which was...
and there was lots of wonderful soft wipes.
There was. I have to say, and in a way, you know, I'm thinking maybe JJ learnt something from the experience with Star Trek. Now, I've not heard anything that he you know, has any regrets at all about where he's taken Star Trek. But for me, what he did with Star Trek was, and a lot of people really enjoy the reboot and everything, but they're action movies. They're not Star Trek movies. They're really good action movies, and the new one by Justin Lin looks like a brilliant action movie, but
he's taken away from Star Trek character movies and... sorry, I just got distracted by Jensen Ackles' tweet. Sorry, everybody.
Jensen
finally tweeted. Finally.
Wearing another he's got a wacky t-shirt on.
Wacky.
And he's got
Trail
a
of lights, you're
a wonderful life.
Oh, bless him.
Oh,
we could have done with seeing the rest of the face though, Jensen.
Oh, you got his lips, don't complain. That's
the lips and neck, I'm not gonna complain. Sorry. So what we're talking about? Yes.
Supernatural in here somewhere.
It was Jensen's fault, always is. Yes, you're quite right. I really love the Star Trek reboots, but I'm not a big Trek person, so I'm not invested in the original Trek. I really love the Next Generation, but I'm not a big fan of the. I'm not a fan, but I'm not a fan of the original Trek. So I really love his reboots, but you're absolutely right. They're action movies.
Yeah, they're great action movies.
And they're not the character pieces that Star Trek really
was. Or
sci-fi
movies. I mean, the last
or sci-fi, no.
And Benedict Cumberbatch running through San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's not a sci-fi movie.
No, you know, no, they're not sci-fi. They're not strange, weird planets.
Yeah, and that was the whole, point of Star Trek. So whatever he's taken from those movies and whatever the mix was with the writers on this movie, it's worked out very well, and I'll give JJ all props for that. It's interesting you say about him having regret about not signing up for the next one, because it's very much been his creative career, if you like. And I saw him talk in 2010. I saw him and Joss Whedon do a basically interview each other at Comic-Con, and the difference, you know, between them being very obvious is that Joss Whedon creates something and he has to have his hands all over it, and he only very reluctantly releases his grip at all to move on to this thing, whereas JJ creates something and walks away. So all his TV properties have been things where he's like, oh, here's Lost, now someone else can do it, here's do it.
Which he obviously did with Star Wars, thinking
in a way he's gone, well, this will be my go and I'll get the train started and then then Rian Johnson of Looper fame is doing the next one, which I'm really excited about because I really like him. But I can understand that it's not in JJ's way of operating to go, yes, I'll sign up for the next three. He would go, I mean, he moves back further and further as he has with Star Trek. So I can understand how he's done that. But JJ, just sit back and enjoy the accolades you're getting now, because this is about as much as people are probably ever going to love you, mate. This is reactions to this have been almost, you know, universally positive. It's taken, you know, both critical acclaim, you know, so many people have seen it multiple times already. And yeah, I think it's set it up so well to go into a very new world, and for however many more movies we get. I'm almost a bit, what's the word? I wish we were just moving forward with it now. I know there's talk, they are doing a Han Solo a young Han Solo movie. There's another spin-off they're doing. I just want these characters all the time.
Because this is the saga movies, and then they're doing a whole other franchises that spin off the saga.
It's all like, I
just want the saga. Let's just do the saga.
I'm not particularly interested in.
Oh, I'm sure I love them as well, but can we do the saga first?
Yeah, can we just do all these movies, a lot of them, now, please?
Now, can we have it now? Why weren't you shooting them all at the same time?
And because we do have to start Supernatural in, and because Jensen Ackles, who's now posted on Facebook as well,
has
no hashtag, just Merry Christmas.
God, love him. There he is,
And his wacky t-shirt. I just wanted to read out, because the DNA of Supernatural comes from Star Wars as well. It was very
Should read that
Eric
out.
Kripke, who called Supernatural Star Wars in Truck Stop America, and just a quote from about when he was developing and casting Sam and Dean. He said, when we started casting, we had archetypes in mind, which were Han Solo and Luke Skywalker. We were really looking for Sam to be empathetic, kind and likable, and really the audience surrogate, the person who the audience would most see themselves as and really carry the story through their eyes. And that required a really unique likability. For Dean, we were looking for Han Solo. We were looking for a devil-may-care, charismatic, a little rough around the edges, a little edgy, says things that are not always the kindest thing, as long as they're funny. And that was what we really started out with. And I think that that got into the DNA of Supernatural. And again, interestingly, the fact that, and I don't know, Kripke's talked and Bob Singer have talked about this, you know, it was halfway through season one when they suddenly realised that Supernatural was about Sam and Dean, not just about a horror story every week.
Yeah.
And characters were what everyone was drawn to, and what the story was, you know, they were demanding that the story was about them, and you know, I'm not surprised given that that's where, you know, that was part of the inspiration. Interestingly, a lot of Star Wars references all throughout the seasons of Supernatural, but only ever from the first three movies.
Funny that.
That's all I'm saying. So it'd be interesting if there's any references to number seven turn up, but no.
They're going to have to be, right?
Only.
Dean would be going to see that movie in a heartbeat.
Yeah, so that was what I was.
Once to get Sam out of hell.
Well, I was just like, bets would be off because they would have to go and see Star Wars.
Yeah, once they get Sam out of hell. Well, hang on a moment. Sam did go and see the new Indiana Jones movie when Dean was in hell. Maybe he can get payback.
Oh, no, I think that would be... no. How dare you say that about Dean?
Dean would do that.
I thought you loved Dean, but obviously you think badly about Dean if you think he would do that. Well, Sam's suffering in hell, in the cage.
Oh, God.
We do know
Jared
is a huge Star Wars fan.
Huge.
gorgeous photo of him taken in his childhood home with his Boba Fett collection as a kid. And a few years ago, he dressed his son Thomas up as Yoda.
Oh, no. And he went and saw this Star Wars with the Austin Police Department.
As you do.
As one does. Went to a special screening with them.
He went to see The Force with The Force.
Exactly.
As I said, it's, the other part is it's just wonderful to see all the fandom explosion for the movie online. Go onto Tumblr and look up the fan art. There is already wonderful memes. There'll be even more as there's more screen caps come out, but wonderful fan art already, particularly of Poe, Ren and Rey. And it's what will keep us going for the next
too long.
The next many movies are hashtag Space Boyfriends, or I think they're also being called Storm Pilot. The Poe and Finn ship has certainly sailed. There's already a few hundred fanfics on Archive of Our Own.
Oh my gosh, good love fandom.
The other ship is Kylo and General Weasley.
Oh.
Of course, because we all love villains together. So,
I don't know about that one.
Well,
yeah, I do love Kylo, though. I'm very excited to see more of him. He's going to have a nasty scar on that face of his, though.
Yes, he's already started to get a bit beat up.
I loved how he was hitting his side when he was bleeding.
Yes.
That was so cool.
Yes.
That was really good.
He's hardcore.
Yeah, that was really cool.
As both having seen the film more than once, there's so many details to get. It's a beautifully set-decked film, if you like. There's so many little things, both Easter eggs with references to older movies, but just the detail on the Millennium Falcon and
I read, someone was telling me, or did I read it, about the chess pieces?
Yes.
On the Millennium Falcon, and they were the original chess pieces from the first movie. And apparently they wanted to use the original chess pieces, but they were framed behind George Lucas's desk.
Remade by the Mythbuster guys.
How cool is that?
And so they're not CGI. They actually made claymation.
They made little claymation ones, yes. Like the original ones, yeah.
A few cameos. So Simon Pegg plays the junk dealer that Ray.
I still can't see that.
Gets her scrappy, trades for rations. Supposedly, and this has not been confirmed, but is now being accepted as truth, Daniel Craig plays the stormtrooper that Ray overpowers with the Force. I don't know if that's just an urban legend. But
well, it's been in a bunch of Easter egg things that I've read.
I know, but I've also read ones where it says no one will actually confirm this, but so there's lots of things like that. There's the whole sort of whether they're the visions that Rey has when she first touches Luke/Vader's lightsaber. You can actually hear in it Obi-Wan saying her name.
Yeah, and who says this is the first steps? Was that Obi-Wan as well?
I'm not sure who that was. I'll have to go and look again. But they actually cut a bit of from Alex Guinness saying the word afraid. I love the fact that they went to that level of detail.
Yeah.
And there's lots both visually and orally in that vision sequence to pick apart.
Yeah, there's a lot in that.
But really just, watching again all the creatures. I'm such a fan, as I said, even though on some level that they annoy the sort of sciencey-brained world builder in me. I love the creatures. Like just looking at the creatures around on Jakku.
I love that one. Drinking
the water with the pig thing. And the one that scavenger that Ray rescues BB-8 from is on this sort of...
And there's a lot of really cool physical effects in this movie as well. They haven't relied totally... Like the prequel movies were like pretty much
CGI.
They're all filmed in a green environment and everything was CGI'd in, whereas this is a lot of physical effects. And so I think that also gave it a lot of a much more genuine feel as well.
Even BB-8 is BB-8.
He's running around.
And I
have
to say,
much.
What I love about the thing I love most about BB-8, because I'm immune to the cute, obviously, is his design, because it makes so much more sense for going over different terrains.
Yeah.
Because it was always my issue with 3PO and R2 was like, how are they going to walk on fucking sand? I mean, seriously, I have enough trouble walking on sand. How are they going to walk on sand?
I was worried about BB-8 getting upstairs.
Well, but we saw him do it, so...
Yeah, slowly. We saw him come down, but I was like, how's he get up? But then he's got those rope things, so maybe he just goes, thong, and then zooms himself up.
Oh, and his little lighter.
Hello, little thumbs-up lighter. And I loved when he said he was classified, and she goes, classified, huh? And he goes, yep. And I actually really liked, too, that I'm sure you've read this as well, that they wrote actual dialogue for BB-8.
Yes.
And then they had two people, Bill Heater and I can't remember who the other person was, record the dialogue and then they beep-booped it.
Yes.
So two people are down as the dialogue, you know, consultants essentially for BB-8. They recorded the dialogue, which they then beep-booped. But everybody who interacted with BB-8 actually knew what the lines of dialogue were that BB-8 was saying,
yes,
because they were scripted dialogue, even though they came
out
in beeps and boops.
The two people who did his dialogue, this is the sort of thing where you just think, oh my God, that's amazing that they went to that much trouble. So Bill Hader, I don't know. I think he's mainly from SNL.
You'd know him if you saw him.
He's one of those, yeah, he has been on a number of
comedy
of movies. But Ben Schwartz I know because he's
Ben
from
Schwartz.
Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
And also in a number of other things. But he's someone you'd know if you saw him. Just that level of detail, though, that they actually had people do the dialogue and then made it into BB-8 noises is just incredible.
Yeah, totally incredible. I love that. And it made me go, I wonder if they did that for R2, if anybody actually knew what R2 was saying, if R2's dialogue was actually scripted. Or if it was just beep boop.
We'll have to find out now.
Yeah, we'll have to know that one. And
I'm trying
Chewie's,
to work out.
Chewie's dialogue scripted.
I need to work out if I can afford a remote control BB-8.
I want one so bad it would drive my dog batshit crazy.
That's what I kept thinking. But then I'm also thinking, yeah, how long would it take my dog to destroy?
No, she would be scared. Mine would be like, I'm not going anywhere near it. It would be awesome. I really love, too, when Ray first meets BB-8 and she's like, your antenna's bent, and he bends his little head forward for her to take it out and straighten it. He's so awesome.
But I thought that was also a nice way of showing more about her character.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's... Yeah, it's no, you know, she's obviously doesn't take, you know, she's not taking him for parts for herself or anything, but she's recognizing him as, you know, a being that is being taken and is going to be, you know, torn apart. And I just thought it was, again, it's a nice way of, you know, she's a good person. So even though she's living in this shitty environment where people obviously are always on the lookout for themselves, you know, she's got a heart that is so. You know, subtle ways like that of building up who the characters are, I thought were really well done.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it showed you straight off who she was, and it was super cute as well. He's so cute. I definitely want one. They're a little expensive, but I definitely want one.
Oh,
that'd be so cool. Can you imagine? Oh my gosh. But I want a real one.
A life size one would be even.
Yes. One that really worked.
I was saying that might be my next cosplay because I have actually orange hair and I'm round in shape. Basically, I'm halfway there. So if I can still work out how to do the noises, I'll be fine.
I was excited to see R2, though, when R2 vroomed back into life.
Oh, and when BB-8's like headbutting R2, that was pretty
wake up. But when
C-3PO was annoying as ever.
Oh, he was so annoying. You probably didn't recognise me with my red arm. Yeah. Do you remember when we discovered that he had the silver leg?
Yes.
Oh, my God. because I bought those things. And I was like, I'm obsessed with that now. Every time I watch Star Wars, I'm like, why didn't I never notice that before? There's a goddamn silver leg.
And a red arm.
I'm very excited to see how excited R2's going to be when he finally sees Luke. Can you imagine? He's just going to step back and forth on his little legs.
Oh.
He's going to be beeping and booping all over the place.
And that was nice that he gets to... I mean, I thought... Yeah. First of all, I'm thinking, why is she leaving BB-8 behind? Then I thought, well, of course R2 would go.
R2's got to go. Luke's his master.
I know.
It's going to be really cute.
So what date does the next movie
I don't have? Know. It's 2017.
Ugh.
I know. Oh, it's only 2015. Ah!
Plenty of time. And I do believe, and I don't know when, but there is at least going to be a re-release, a theatrical release of the original versions of the first three movies.
In their original, before Lucas started putting all the random things in there? Yes.
I think they're going to be, they will have gone through the...
Yeah, they've been jazzed up.
Yeah, brightened up a bit.
Yeah.
But, no, before he did all the shitty
before
stuff.
He put that horrible scene in where Han steps on Jabba's tail.
Yeah, all that
fuck,
stuff.
I hate that scene.
Yeah. So there is meant to be a theatrical release of them. So it would be wonderful to see, the four of those movies together.
I want them to release them on DVD because all my DVD versions have been screwed with. And, and I was watching last night and it's, that scene where Vader picks up the Emperor and throws him into the pit is nowhere near as powerful when he's screaming no, no, when he just did it silently, did it. And, it's like, oh, why did you do that? Dude, leave alone. Don't have to worry about that anymore. He sold Lucasfilms.
Yeah. Oh, spare a thought for George Lucas.
And his $5 billion.
Well, yeah, it's interesting.
Look, we wouldn't have Star Wars without him.
No, and I do spare a thought for how he would feel. Like, it must be a strange mixture of happiness and, I don't know, sort of the thing you created going on and continuing to be successful, and particularly after he had a couple of decades of people hanging shit on him.
Yeah, that's that. Well, and I think it's really important to remember that we wouldn't have the original Star Wars without George Lucas, or these characters without George Lucas. We wouldn't have this universe without George Lucas.
Of course, and there's no reason you ever need to watch the prequel movies ever again.
And, I think I've barely watched them. Like, I own them, obviously. I've got the Blu-ray box set and all that kind of stuff. I've never watched them on the Blu-ray box set. I've watched the other three. A few times, and I have older versions of the other three pre-Blu-ray, but I never watched them. I think I've only seen a couple of them in the movies.
It's hard to, but I do think I did watch the first three before this came out, and the week before this, the Force Awakens came out. I do think I'll go back and watch the prequels just because I think it's good to remind myself.
Yeah, and you know what? I remember seeing it in the movies, and I didn't hate them. I was just disappointed in them because they weren't what I was hoping for, and they weren't the world that I loved.
Yeah, they were not very good movies.
They were just weird.
Okay, we hope you've enjoyed this. We could probably go on. We could easily go on. What am I saying?
We keep going.
There's so much more we could say. Maybe after we've both seen the movies 20 times, we'll do another podcast.
I can't wait for it to come out on DVD because I'm going to buy it.
I will get that on. I will be getting the Blu-ray of that. That's absolutely no question about that because there should be some kick-ass special features.
Yes.
In the meantime, it probably will continue to be on. I saw it again on Thursday, so Christmas Eve at 2:00 in the afternoon at a cinema complex where it had both the 2D and the 3D playing at once. The 3D session was sold out. And the one I went to was probably about half full.
It was about half full this morning, and I went at 9:30 in the morning.
I think it's going to be on for a while.
And I have to say, I'm not a big fan of 3D. Like, I tend not to go and see movies in 3D because I find that it really mutes the colours. The chroma is always really flattened. It pulls back the The luminance is always really dull. I just find that it completely deadens the look of it from like a colour and a brightness perspective. It makes it really murky and muddy. So I tend not to go to 3D because I think, generally speaking, it looks better and brighter in 2D. But the 3D for Star Wars is great. I loved the 3D.
Having seen it in both, I don't... Like, I think brilliant films are brilliant films in 3D or 2D. I've never seen, and I see, because the IMAX cinema in Melbourne is opposite where I work, and most of the big premieres, all the Marvel movies and that have been in 3D, I often end up seeing them like that. There's very few that I think, you know, I'd say you must see in 3D. There have been some movies like Gravity that I think totally owned it in 3D.
But usually I don't think it adds a hell of a lot to it.
No, but having seen this in 3D and IMAX, there were some amazing moments. Like there's one where like one of the battleships is almost feel like it was about to touch my nose.
I know, that was so cool. That was about the only gimmicky thing, was it? Because it was just drifting in space and it just kept drifting and drifting and drifting like straight out, and because they're so pointy. But what I loved about it was it gave you a real sense of the enormity of these ships. Yes. Like when Rey was rappelling into that star, the, you know, busted crash star cruise.
Oh, yes, that was gorgeous.
You know, and it was just, it looked so big. So I actually loved the 3D on this. I didn't feel like it. It doesn't add anything from a story point of view. You can definitely watch it in 2D, but the 3D was really made it feel big.
I thought particularly on Jakku, I thought the sand dunes and everything, that really came out well. So, yeah, I think it's worth, you know, if you're going to see it more than once, see it in every version.
So I've seen IMAX 3D and 2D now.
So have I. So I'd probably next time, I'd go and see it in 2D again, I think.
I'd probably see it in 3D again if I see it again next time.
Well, you need to come down here and see it in 3D at IMAX.
Oh, God, okay. Because I've only ever been to IMAX twice, so that would be good.
Anyway, we will be back. Letters will be back with Supernatural centric podcasts.
Yes, we really need to do a wrap up of the season so far.
We will do a season so far before we return with new Supernatural on the 20th of January. Until then, you can check out Amy Sweet on Dean's fantastic blog, SPN Con Tips, on Tumblr.
Yep.
And there's probably something you need to read on the Super Wiki too. You read the entry about Star Wars. We've got a whole entry, all the quotes, Star Wars quotes in the series, as well as some background on the influence of Star Wars on Supernatural.
Yep. And you can always read up on all my back reviews and stuff at Sweet on Dean as well.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Bye.
May the Force be with you.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.